Hey guys, welcome into another episode of From the Wing. I am Christian Clark, the Pelicans beat writer for NOLA.com and The Advocate. We're coming at you Thursday afternoon, a couple of hours before the Pelicans play the Mavericks. They're on a nine-game losing streak. They got stuck in Denver on Wednesday, had to fly to Dallas today. So they're doing the whole thing of flying to the city, go to the hotel for a little bit, and then go to the arena and play a game. If you think back, the Portland Trailblazers actually did something similar 2 years ago in New Orleans and beat New Orleans, by the way. Dame had 43 points in that game. We are going to mostly talk about trade stuff today. I think there'll be plenty of time to, we've already spent a lot of time, I guess, dissecting what has gone around in the streak. So I wanted to make this more trade focused. Adam, ye trade winds are blowing. They're starting to blow. We've got about a week. We have 1 week until the deadline.
Yar, one week, 1 week out in the trade winds.
You're kind of like the Steve the Pirate in my life. Except, you have a good job.
Yar. I covered my eye for audio only. I covered my eye like a pirate.
And if you don't know who Steve the Pirate is, or if you've never seen that movie, shut this podcast off and watch it.
Yeah, it's that'd be terrible if you know. I would hope that all of us can dodge wrenches and thus also balls.
I thought that movie was the funniest movie I've ever seen when I saw it in theaters.
Dude, we talk about this. I don't want to completely derail us, but like we talk about this all the time. Like we got like the last good era of comedy where like everything that came out was hilarious. And then it just stopped. And now it's like complete hit or miss all the time. We had like the last little bit of runway of just every comedy was good.
Patches and getting crushed to death in the casino. I'm sorry. It's cruel. It made me laugh.
Nobody makes me bleed my own blood. All right. Anyway. Trade wins. Who do you want to start with? Where do you want to start?
Okay. Let's start with OG Anunoby. Chris Haynes said on his new podcast with Mark Stein, Memphis doesn't want New Orleans to get OG and New Orleans doesn't want Memphis to get OG. And that stirred some stuff up, but I gotta say, I think it's kind of true. I think it's pretty true. I mean, I've heard that from the New Orleans side. They don't want the Grizzlies to get OG. Like that makes them tough.
So this was like the big takeaway publicly from that podcast. Naturally, I had to go listen to it. I want to figure out like what I can parse out. And the bigger things that I got out of that, I feel that's a true statement. My struggle with this, with the OJ talk has always been that the Raptors don't have to do it. Like everything coming out of Toronto regarding OG's availability really sounds OG sided. It really sounds like I want to get out of here. Someone come get me. And you look at who it's coming through. Like Chris Haynes famously is like really, really attached to players, really attached to Clutch. Like he would know if OG wants out.
Oh, is OG hit by Clutch?
Is he?
Yeah, he is. I was kidding. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, I think you have the right idea here.
But it's even if he wasn't, like Haynes always has the player side of these conversations, like almost exclusively. Like, you know, he's famous for knowing the ins and outs of Damian Lillard, like everything he's ever thought. So hearing him and Stein have a conversation, while I didn't find the pod to be the most entertaining pod I've ever heard, it was a nice dialogue between player-sided guy and guy with various league sources going back multiple decades. Him and Stein are actually like a really good dialogue because the picture it painted, the entire conversation, Stein said he has never believed that the stars of Toronto were ever really available. Like this, the star, not free agents, but trade assets, specifically who he's referencing there is OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam, the ones that everybody wants to talk about. He does not believe they've ever been available. He thinks Toronto just like is picking up the phone. And this is how these things go. Toronto is picking up the phone. They're listening, hoping to be blown away because that would be great if they could be blown away and appease this guy and get him out of here and also get a haul for him. They both, you know, they talk about it. They say, I believe that New Orleans and Memphis both don't want each other to have OG Anunoby. I also believe Toronto doesn't really have to make this decision yet. And I think there's going to be a lot of that in a lot of people's decision making at the deadline. Like, this is still the Wemby, Scoot, Thompson twin lottery draft in the summer. And I think a lot of people want to know where they stand in that before they make seismic roster decisions. And I think if you're not compelled because a contract isn't up or something like that, I could see you kicking the can to the summer. So it really sounds like OG wants out. Toronto doesn't have to move him. Would love to have their socks knocked off by an offer. Have not yet. And Memphis and New Orleans, like, maybe stare each other down and like say, well, my offer may not be what Toronto wants, but it's better than yours. Well, I'll throw in this extra shitty first round pick and beat yours. Like, maybe the best of those two offers, what they're willing to give, wins it. Maybe Toronto kicks it to the summer and doesn't actually send him because he was never really that available anyway. I thought the other interesting little nugget is that Stein and Haynes both said they have not been able to substantiate the 3 first-round pick offer that was made for OG Anunoby, which everybody hypothesizes would be the Knicks. Both of them said they have not been able to find that or figure that out, which leads you to believe like Toronto put that out to try and like juice a market, like create something. Like, guys, I don't know, these offers you gave me, they're not this. Because if it was the Knicks, like, they'd turn that down anyway. Like, if the Knicks did it, then, you know, here's like a giant billboard that says, thank you, Knicks. Everybody else pay this. So, yeah.
Well, I think the other part of that, too, is it's very important to know what kind of protections are placed on the picks that are being offered. Because, you know, a first-round pick is a very different thing if it's unprotected, if it's top 4 protected, if it's top 10 protected, if it's lottery protected. You know, I mean, like, we saw David Griffin last year essentially trade the same first round pick twice, right? Like, he protected the same first round pick
on the front and the back to two different teams.
Yeah. Like, that was a junk first round pick, right? Yeah. And that one didn't convey. It turned out, because the Pelicans made the playoffs, that the 2025 first from the Milwaukee Bucks conveyed to Portland, who I think has since moved it. But yeah, the protections matter on this stuff a lot. You know, I mean, it's, you know, when I hear three first round picks, one, I think you're asking the right question. Is that even two? And two, what are the protections on those picks?
And also, like, who's giving them? Because where do you think it's going to fall? Like, if it's, you know, there's a huge difference between Milwaukee saying, I'll give you 3 future firsts and, you know, the Charlotte Hornets. You have very different outcomes in your mind for both of them. So lottery protections are more and less significant for either one. I tell people all the time, like, I'm probably harsher than most people on first round picks, because honestly, I look at the statistical outcome of a successful draftee in those spots. And I just kind of look at them like, after 10, they're all a crapshoot. And even after 5, they're really a crapshoot. So for me, like, just saying first round pick, I need to know, like, probable lottery and high lottery, and then there's everything else. That's kind of how I think of them. And the important thing for us, too, it's not just protections on which picks. We have quite a lot we could be talking about. If we rule out these two Lakers-involved swap and deferral picks, is that what we have out there? Is it those plus a player, and, you know, Toronto wants specifically the Lakers-involved picks? It's possible.
Yeah, I think I did report a couple of days ago that the Pelicans are unlikely to move the 2023 first round pick, which has swap rights with the Lakers. You can read the whole explanation for that. It's kind of complicated, but I still believe that to be true. You know, I think the 2024 first unprotected from the Lakers that could be deferred until 2025 is quite a golden chip for New Orleans. I mean, I think that's probably their best trade asset, and they also have all their own picks, and they got a 2027 first from Milwaukee that's unprotected. And if you look at that, like, you know, that extends past when Giannis is under contract. So I'm wondering, you know, could you sell some team on, well, that's so far out there that Giannis is not even under a contract. He could be a Chicago Bull by then.
I don't know why anybody would believe it now after he already stayed. He already stayed. He won the title. Like, they're great. And yeah. he's never, like, while he's missing games and stuff this year and everything, like, it's entirely management based and playoff focused. It's like, we don't care about the individual awards as much anymore as like, we need to win in the playoffs. Everything they're doing, they're like tweaking the eighth and ninth guy on the bench to make title runs. So I don't know if you could try to convince people that he's going to leave. I think we already did that exercise and it went poorly. We spent probably 3 years hypothesizing who was going to pry him away from Milwaukee. And then he just re-upped and canceled it. And I loved him for it. I can't ever be mad at Milwaukee. They could sign all the players I hate. They're rumored to be interested in Jay Crowder. I hate Jay Crowder. If he goes there, I will still not hate Milwaukee because they did something that was a huge net positive for small market teams like myself. They built something sustainable that is very, very, very good around a star who doesn't want to leave. And also Drew went there. So like, it's just a very aesthetically pleasing franchise.
So let's talk about OG's potential fit in New Orleans at the end of this show, the back half of it. I'll give you some fake trades that I'll let you give a thumbs up or thumbs down on. But let's talk about his fit on this team. I think if they got him, they'd go with the starting five of CJ McCollum, OG Anunoby, Brandon Ingram, Zion Williamson, and Jonas Valanciunas. That's your five. OG, you know, maybe the best perimeter defender in the sport, leads the NBA in steals right now, way up there in deflections. You know, is can definitely switch one through four. I think he can even play five in certain situations. I think Willie Green has shown the way he wants to play defense when it matters most is switching. I think Willie would ride him into the ground in the important moments of the game. So I love it from that perspective. You know, pretty decent catch and shoot three guy. I think there's not a ton of creativity off the dribble for his game, not a great passer. And I think the other part that probably has not gotten talked about enough is he misses a ton of games. Wrote down. Oh, so here's his games played for each season of his NBA career so far. 74, 67, 69, 43, 48, 45. I have complained more than anybody about how little the Pelican stars play. Similar problem there for OG.
Yeah. So, clearly, defensive fit is not a question. He's one of the best perimeter defenders. He's got really great size, really great length. He is essentially like locally, I think a lot of fans talk about him as he's Herb plus. It's if Herb could consistently shoot, the least you're getting is that same style of defender, maybe even a little better. And also, like, he's not an offensive liability ever, though don't create a mythology in your own mind that he's gonna all of a sudden be like on ball, you know, driving around guys and kicking it out for threes and stuff like that. Like, it's not that. He does have some flash games. Like, him and Mikal Bridges are very similar to me in that when you watch them night to night, there are some games every once in a while where they just are on a different plane of existence where they do have all the offensive stuff going and you're like, why does that not happen every night? Sometimes they have it, especially if they get cooking in transition, but both of them leave you wanting if you're looking night to night and you're wanting that every night. But hey, the Pelicans do not need that every night. They just need reliability on the perimeter from an offensive perspective, and defensively, clearly he fits all the way around. So it's like a super upgrade on Herb. I'm not going to make him into being much more than that. I thought it was very opportune phrasing to say that he would be ridden into the ground in important moments. I 100% believe it. I do think that is what would happen, but yeah, he's an easy fit. I think the question marks for me have more to do with what do you pay to get him here? What is his future here? Are you investing in the next contract and paying him, you know, $30 million a year on his next deal, or is he essentially a rental? And that, I think that affects the price that you're willing to pay as well. Like, what you think is going to happen there. Hopefully part of the reason he wants out is because he's, you know, maybe looking for that next contract already in his mind. And, you know, it's an audition of sorts. But seamless defensive fit, easy ask on the offensive side that actually takes a little pressure off of him from the perspective of what his role's been in Toronto a lot of this time. And we won't play him 48 minutes a game. So that might be fun for him to, you know, get a break during a game every once in a while.
Not with this sports and performance team, buddy. Probably not on the second night of back-to-backs either.
Yeah, I mean, look, they play a lot of minutes out there in Toronto. I feel like any of them getting anywhere else is going to be like, man, this is nothing. This is good times.
Yeah,
36 minutes tonight?
I think there might be some philosophical differences between Toronto and here and how the loads are managed.
Maybe a smidge.
When you look at OG's frame, 6'7", 7 foot two wingspan, 230 pounds, very similar frame to Herb, except he just has about 25 pounds of muscle more. So, you know, just from a frame physical standpoint, like he's basically just really yoked Herb, like stronger Herb, which is crazy.
This is a wild thing to say. It's a wild thing to say, and I would like to challenge you on it, and I cannot.
Yeah, like that's just an absurd like frame for a professional basketball player. Like his, you know, the way he can sit down and guard too at that size is pretty special, I think. And like that size allows him to like guard some centers at sometimes too. Like you're not throwing him Jokic like, the whole game or anything, but like the girth allows him to like even guard fives. And like Herb is amazing, but like Herb's just too small to do that, I think.
Yeah. And so like even if you think about like you think about a series against, you know, a series against like roaming fours that are actually like centers that like to play the four, or like the Clippers where everybody's 6'8", like he improves you in those situations. If they have a center that's relatively small, you can do some things there. He's a really, really interesting player here. And maybe there is still, you know, like more on the bone for him value wise in terms of what he is in his career. He's not how old is he? Is he already past 26 years old? I forget.
He might be 25.
I want to say 25 is right.
25 turns 26 this summer. He's under contract this year, the following year, and I believe it's a player option, which he's almost certain to decline and seek a new deal. So you're guaranteed to have him for a season and a half.
Yeah. So, you know, everything for me comes down to what you pay for him. I think it's clear that he's a known quantity in a similar way that I the reason that I liked a Bojan deal is because you knew what you were paying for. With OG, it's very similar. You know what you're paying for. I know a lot of people want to talk about him being a lot more. I think it's smart not to. Do you have any feel, or can we talk at all about like what we think the value of that deal should be, or where we think it is? Like we know that like I heard Haynes and Stein say three firsts, like they haven't seen that anywhere. So we know matching salary wise, like it almost predicates that DG and Jax have to be in the deal because they're the salary that makes all these work.
I mean, honestly, I haven't told like what has been like offered, and preliminarily, is that even a word? But I haven't got that far. But I think the interesting thing about Toronto's needs and what the Pelicans have is like this could go so many different ways. Like, I mean, I was going to save this for later, but like if Toronto wanted a traditional center and the Pelicans wanted to make him available, like Jonas could be in this deal, right? I mean, I don't even, that's just complete speculation.
Yeah.
But like they don't have to do that, and they could just do Davante Jax, some picks, and then you probably get into the discussion of, you know, young guys on great contracts like, you know, Herb Jones, Najee Marshall, you've got Trey Murphy, you've got Dyson Daniels. And look, I don't have any thoughts on whether or not you should put those guys in deals. Like part of my job is like have good relationships with players.
Can I recklessly speculate?
Sure.
Cause for me, I mean, for me, the reason that I always like, I've been mentally killing this deal in my head since the first uttering of its possibility, because I always felt like the eventual price that Toronto would want is some version of, and like, you know, Jackson, DG or the matching salary, like throw them out. The stuff they get in my mind was going to have to be like two firsts and either Dyson or Trey. And that was tough for me because I also bet they don't want the Milwaukee first. I'm sure it's probably like a Lakers first, another first, and one of those two guys, and our offer would more likely be, you know, the less preferential first, or like heavily protected, or like lesser value conditions first, and Herb instead. And I do wonder, like, you know, Nate Duncan and them had a had like a mock deadline. I thought they had they hit on a good point here that I think you have some concerns if you're Toronto, if you're trying to put Herb out there. If has anybody looked at our buddy from Florida State, Scotty Barnes, lately? It hadn't been great. And it hasn't exactly been lights out shooting. There's a clip going around from last night that was pretty special in terms of the amount of missed baskets in a single possession.
Oh, I watched that whole game last night. It was Toronto and Utah. And oh my God, Walker Kessler, Texas Ranger, seven blocks. I think he had four of them on one possession.
Yeah, it was ugly stuff. But like, I don't know, you know, if I'm them, like, do you want to add somebody that can't shoot to a guy that you have questions about his shooting to a team that can't shoot? I think that they've always landed in my mind. Toronto lands on a price, an eventual price that they would want that I wouldn't want to give. And so that's always where I go. But hey, maybe there's some truth to the Memphis versus New Orleans thing. And we bid a little bit more just to make sure he doesn't go there. I don't know.
Okay. A couple more thoughts for me. Look, I think, like, OG makes a ton of sense fit-wise. I do have some questions about, is there enough playmaking in, like, that starting lineup, in your closing lineup, if you were to get him? I Zion and Bia, they could definitely pass the ball, but it feels a little short on just, like, guys who move the ball a little bit. And the other part of this that I'm curious about, too, is OG okay coming into a situation in Orleans where he's likely to be the fourth banana offensively? Because, I mean, you're just not going above Zion Williamson. You're not going above Brandon Ingram. You're not going above CJ McCollum in the offensive hierarchy here. If you're OG, I don't know, but you're going to be a catch and shoot guy. And you're going to be asked to do a lot of the dirty work defensively. Like, are you okay with being that guy in your new situation in New Orleans?
This was our whole conversation around if they were to go look at, you know, hypothetical bigs that fit for the Pelicans. Like, this was the problem there too. If you were going to get any of the bigs that do fit, that are, like, potentially available and better fits next to Zion, if you were actually to go do that, most of them would be taking a demotion if they came here. My problem with Gary Trent, his usage is really high over there. I don't know if I can get him 14 or 15 shots a game on this team. I'm not sure. So, yeah, OG, same thing. Your usage in Toronto is pretty wild. Your usage here ain't going to be that. And honestly, as much as people think we should lean on JV more often, he might be fifth banana to JV on a lot of nights.
Yeah.
Like, JV has a surefire. When our offense bogs down, we have a surefire guy inside that we can throw the ball into, and he can go get you some buckets sometimes. They're going to do that. They've shown this season that they will do that when the offense gets stuck. They're not drawing up offense for OG Anunoby, I don't think. Not often. So it's interesting.
Yeah. No, totally. Totally. I mean, I think one of the other points too, you know, we've talked about this before, but the Pelicans have luxury tax considerations moving forward. Like, Brandon Ingram and CJ McCollum are above $30 million. Zion is at 13 right now. He's jumping above $30 million next year. Like, that's three dudes above the 30 mil mark. I think if the Pelicans are going to take on a guy who has, you know, a year or years left on his deal after this year, it's got to be a guy they really like, because they're going to have to move some pieces around either at the deadline or in the summer to probably duck under the tax line. I mean, I'm not going to rule out completely being a tax team next season, but I would be surprised if the Pelicans are a luxury tax team next season. And I think OG is one guy who fits that bill. I could say that comfortably. Like, he's a guy they're like, okay, you're under contract next year. Like, we'll shuffle some things around because the fit is so good here. But I think it's got to be a guy they really like.
So he's one of those guys, like, this is what I call dipping our toe into the tax. Like, we'll put ourselves into the numbers where we're in tax danger, where we can decide whether or not we need to duck under or not when the time comes.
And you have until the trade deadline to get it done too, right? Next year, right?
So they could potentially start as like a tax team at the start of the season and get under by the deadline. We've seen a lot of teams operate that way in the past. But it makes sense. He's he is the most talented player that has been spoken about that sounds like he is some level of available. Again, like I have my own doubts about how willing Toronto is to just acquiesce to him wanting to leave. And again, same question. I think the most relevant question probably is the last one you brought up about, you know, this is a guy that's got his eyes on his next contract. He needs to go somewhere where he's going to be valued and going to touch the ball so that he can get that contract up. And he may be coming here. Like, he basically have to decide, like, do I want to go there to try to be like winner guy, be my best defensive self and contribute in my spot? Because it's not going to be utilization guy. Like, he could potentially go the Jeremy Grant route also and get traded somewhere where, you know, it's a bad team and he can get a ton of usage and just go get that monster contract. It's kind of up to his preference.
Yeah, totally. Okay, I'm going to throw some fake trades at you. But before I do that, I was at Mizzou when OG Anunoby was playing his high school basketball in Jefferson City, Missouri. It's about, I don't know, 45 minutes drive from Columbia, not very far. The basketball program when I was there was going through it. Kim Anderson did not even bother to recruit OG Anunoby, and he was in his backyard. And OG went to Indiana, and look at him now. He's like the most coveted guy at the NBA trade. Like, Kim Anderson, what are we doing, man? What were you doing?
Well, look, if it makes you feel any better, we're pretty terrible. If you look at like high school rankings for any sport and then look at where guys turn out in the pros, we're kind of bad at the high school evaluation thing. We're pretty bad. So I don't really go back and like historically bash people for missing out on this stuff. Cause like even in the draft, it's not like he went top 10, you know, like it wasn't exactly that clear. He's just one of those home run dudes now that you're like, oh, he's cool to get, you know, like Herb, similar fashion. Herb put up all the stats in the world, was all conference and was the leader of his team and couldn't sniff the first round. So it's interesting. I give people a little bit of a pass though. Actually, there was some sort of chart today I was looking at for football where like the best high school prospect for all the SEC football programs, all of them, like, three of them were pros and just kind of okay pros. And it's like best ranked high school player ever. Like, yeah, it's hard to guess what a 17-year-old is. It's really hard.
It is. Okay. Let me throw some of these fake trades at you. The first one gets the Pelicans a little bit of shooting, gets the Pelicans a very good shooter. Malik Beasley, with the Utah Jazz coming to New Orleans, sending out Devontae Graham, Jackson Hayes, and the New Orleans Pelicans 2027 first round pick, lottery protected.
I mean, deal sounds fair. Players good enough for that compensation. And like he doesn't just add shooting, he adds movement shooting, which means, you know, you don't have to open very much daylight for him to get it off. So that's more applicable gravity. Malik Beasley can get hot and make 8 or 9 threes in a game. My entire question with him is like, on a Willy team where it seems like decisions are made from a defensive perspective forward, how much does Malik Beasley play? He's like, yes, he adds a lot of gravity. I don't think there's a person around the league that would call him a good defender or even an attentive defender. So does Willy, you know, dump him to the end of the bench because like I can't put you out there? Because like, look, a lot of people have their misgivings about people that have made it out in our rotations as it is.
Malik Beasley, I'm not calling you out, I'm calling you up because your head was in the clouds on defense again.
I just wonder. That's my only question with Beasley. I think Beasley, like, I totally get the basketball fit. I don't know that I trust that he would play as much as we would think for Willie, as long as he's calling shots with the defensive lapses that are going to come.
I think there is the Pelicans have some legitimate interest in Beasley. I think there is some real interest. Doesn't mean the deal is going to get done, but I think they've definitely done quite a bit of homework on him. He's an incredible shooter, like has amazing gravity, you know, can come off of screens and get that bad boy up, like needs a little airspace to get that bad boy up. Like the jumper looks like it belongs in a museum. Like I would, like they should just make an oil painting out of Malik Beasley's jumper. It's beautiful.
It's a Rembrandt.
Yeah, it's gorgeous, man. It is very beautiful. There are some concerns, you know, like I think you just outlined a very legitimate concern. You know, can he be okay enough defensively for Willie Green to trust him? Because Willie Green oftentimes does not trust guys who have defensive lapses. And I think the other thing too is, you know, like the character stuff, right? Like the Pelicans have really valued quote unquote good guys. Right. And, I don't know. I can't comment on his character one way or the other. I can just say that he's had legal issues, like, you know, like bringing a gun out into, just Google it, you know, like
go look them up. They're readily available. If you type in Malik Beasley, it will be one of the pre-populated Google search terms.
Yeah. So just look that one up. But I don't know. I mean, he's, you know, I think it's a pretty attractive contract situation. $15.6 million this year and a $16 million player option next year. Or team option. I'm sorry. Team option. So it's like if the Pelicans like this, it's like, yeah, let's pick this bad boy up. And if it goes poorly, it's like, well, shoot, we might have just, you know, like give it away 2 second picks if that first doesn't convey, or, you know, a bad first in 2027 for 30 games of Malik Beasley. But that's what we did.
I need to shout out your friend and our friend of the show, Dane Moore's tweet from the other day, because we're talking about Malik Beasley. He did like a Bart Simpson. I will not say that Rudy Gobert was traded for seven first round picks. If Beasley and Vando go out the door for first, I will not say it was seven picks. I will not say it was seven picks. That was a great tweet.
I hope nobody from the Timberwolves is watching Walker Kessler, Texas Ranger play basketball.
Oh, bro. How tough is that? The fact that like it wasn't just that he was a draft pick. He did your media. He was in the door. He was in your jersey. Oh, this is tough. Tough stuff.
It is tough stuff, my friend. Okay. Well, I guess let's stay in Minnesota. This is my fake trade number two. Admittedly, this is more of a Christian Clark driving this one rather than stuff I've heard from the Pelicans.
I know who this is going to be.
Talked about him before. Naz Reid, Pelicans sending out Kyra Lewis Jr. and 2 second round picks.
Look, Naz is coming off a heater. He had a monster game this week where I think all of NBA Twitter is officially like on notice that Naz Reid can be a good basketball player, because he just had a freaky, freaky offensive game. The question with Naz is his defense, and he's done a great job adapting his body. Like he played it. We've talked about this before. He played at LSU. I watched all his college games. I liked him. He was a little robotic, a little stiff as a shooter, but could make some shots in some big spots. He had some offensive versatility that made him one of the top high school prospects in the country. And, you know, we can debate how Will Wade got him down here and how they did. Because he's from the New Jersey area, but he just really had a passion for Tigers basketball.
He wanted to be in a warmer climate. Come on now.
Yeah, that's all. And, you know, chose to play for us instead of Florida. Anyway, he's a great basketball player. His contract is about to expire. I think the comp sounds right from the pick side of things. I think if Kyra is who it takes to make that happen, I mean, it's kind of a giving Kyra the opportunity to go play somewhere that might have a clearer path for him to grow in and a clearer path for Naz here. Like I understand it for both players. It would hurt my heart a little bit on Kyra, 'cause like, I'm still a believer, and it's still like, he's my adult son. But that's like everybody on the Pelicans, right? Like if we lose anybody that's on this roster, I'm going to be some level of heartbroken. But yeah, Naz feels like somebody that could fill a lot of needs. We've seen him pressed into action a lot, and he's at worst survivable.
Yeah, I mean, if you get him, you know, this year, he's your backup five behind JV, you know, if he plays well, maybe you can close with them sometimes. And then going forward, you know, he's an unrestricted free agent this upcoming summer. If you like what you see, you know, sign him to a deal, keep him around. I think what's interesting to me about him is one of the hardest parts about building around Zion is getting the right center next to him, right? Like, Zion is this incredible talent, but, you know, I think just Naz potentially allows you to play a little bit of five out. And I'm not saying he's like the greatest 3-point shooter in the world a little bit, but like, he'll take them when they're there, right? He's not a reluctant 3-point shooter. Like, he'll get them up. You know, he's kind of been league average so far. Yeah. So you could probably go five out with him and Zion. And like, Naz is not proven by any means, but I think if you could just find that guy where you could go five out for even 15, 20 minutes a game with Z, like, that could be a potentially big unlock for you.
Yeah, I mean, he's clearly a little bit of an experiment, but a low-cost experiment to a degree. So, like, that's the appeal, is, like, you have he's an option. It could work. You're not paying completely, you know, you're not selling the farm to get him. So it's, you know, it's interesting. It's very intriguing because he has flashed some stuff.
Yeah, I wrote down in eight games as a starter this year, 16.5 points, 7.3 rebounds, takes more than five threes per 36 minutes. So gets them up for a center at a fairly healthy amount.
Did it in college too.
Okay, the last two I've got are fake OG Anunoby trades. There is a couple twists in these bad boys. Give you this one first. OG Anunoby and Juancho Hernan Gomez to New Orleans. I'm uniting the Hernan Gomez in New Orleans.
After all the years of trying to unite the Holiday brothers, this man's coming in and uniting the true team, the Hernan Gomez.
Well, wipe that smile off your face. In this fake trade that I'm not advocating for, I'm just simply saying it's a fake trade, sending out Devontae Graham, Jackson Hayes, Herb Jones, and the Pelicans' top four protected 2027 first-round pick.
All right. Say it for me again. Say so Graham, Jax, Herb.
And the Pelicans 2027 top four protected first round pick. I'm only sending out one first in this scenario, because I guess I'm assuming that a lot of this is just bluster and he's not going to go for maybe as much as we thought.
I feel like they're getting two picks. This feels low for me. That's the only thing I'll say. If you can do it for this, sign us up. It's over. Conversation done. Trade market's done. This is kind of, it feels like the hypothesis that the market really isn't there. You know, super role player people feel like there's a definite ceiling on his potential, and it's hard. It's just hard to make deals at the deadline. So market isn't what it is. Toronto decides to move on. Just okay, get it, well, you know.
Yeah, let's amend this then, and let's just say Devontae Graham, right, Jackson Hayes, Herb Jones, the Pelicans 2025 first round pick, top four protected, and the Pelicans 2027 first round pick, top four protected.
All right, I need to ask an unfortunate nerdy clarifying question. If it's the Pelicans 2025, does that mean we need to accept the Lakers 2024? Like, would we have to declare one way or the other?
I don't think you would have to declare right now, because they have their 2023 pick and 2024.
Oh,
pick,
right. We have both. Yeah. So we can defer the Lakers. We'd have ours for either year, no matter what. Okay. So yeah, you wouldn't have to declare it. That's stupid. Yeah. I mean, I think that's realistically what the Pelicans would want the realistic deal to be at, like, at a maximum. I think that's where they'd be, like, how far they'd be willing to go. And I think I'd do it. My questions are on the Toronto side. From the Pelican side, I think it's just enough where it's starting to make me uncomfortable, because I'm spending two first round picks on a, you know, fourth or fifth best offensive option.
And also Herb Jones, who loves being in New Orleans, is on a great deal, was one of the best perimeter defenders in the entire sport last year, still an elite defensive player, even though his 3-point shot has gone down the drain a little bit this year. But yeah, that one hurts, man. Like, Herb loves it here, and like a big part of like this turnaround this last 2 years.
Yeah, I would say I think Toronto would turn it down, honestly. And this is, we're getting back into that space where I say this is where I never thought the OG thing was going to happen, because we're getting to the space where like Pelicans are already uncomfortable, and Pelicans are uncomfortable, and we're asking Toronto to take on a non-shooter to put next to a non-shooter, a young non-shooter that they are trying to make a, you know, a top three player on their team. So okay. Interesting stuff.
That's fair. All right. One more OG one for you. This is a slightly different variation. This ends with them getting a traditional center. OG Anunoby and Juancho Hernangómez to New Orleans, sending out Jonas Valanciunas, Kyrie Lewis Jr., Najee Marshall, and only one first in this scenario. Milwaukee's, well, we can just say New Orleans, 2027 first round pick, top four protected. Why not? So JV, Kyra, Najee, and the 27 first going out.
Oh boy, that's a lot of, there's a lot of emotion in there. This is a heart tugger. Herb's bad enough. You take JV and Najee away from me at the same time, and Kyra goes too. Oh God. Oh, just hurts to talk about. I mean, I think from a value standpoint and like fixing your roster to what your coach has made it clear he wants to do, it makes all the sense in the world. I think I immediately need a center that I like need to be able to play, even if it's just junk minutes. I'm a little light. Can I get a Christian Coloco or something?
Yeah. Yeah, you would. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean,
if I can get a Christian Coloco or something in there, you know, young upside, don't know exactly what the upside is, has flashed some rim defense, been a little bit of a clumsy player, you know, I could understand, because then at least I have like somebody to eat some minutes at the five as well. But I think on the Pels comp side, yeah, I think it makes sense. Like Najee would be essentially like taking up the mantle of Josh Hart, playing himself into so much value that he facilitated a big trade.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see it. I see why it would work. I would say, yeah, my only question would be, I don't think Toronto would do it. I don't think they actually value a traditional big all that much. Like they've had him on the team and have shied away. They've never been big on playing Boucher very much. Ken Birch, you know, they cycle through a lot of like D-list centers. That's what they like to do.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons, and it's been reported on for a little dysfunction right now in Toronto, is I don't think a lot of those dudes are thrilled about playing for Nick Nurse right now. And that seems like an uncertain situation.
He was the greatest coach in the NBA. Like what? 2-3 years ago, he's the greatest coach in the NBA. What are we doing? What do you mean? Junior Tibbs over there. We just got to like, we really got to calm down sometimes when we like try to anoint people. Like the man had a good roster and added Kawhi Leonard to it. We don't have to make him the greatest coach in the league. We don't have to do that. Like I understand if you want to make an argument that Eric Spoelstra is a top five coach in the NBA, I am here for it because he has done it with all types of rosters, including the LeBron rosters. Nick Nurse just kind of plays everybody that's good for 40 minutes and doesn't use his bench. It's Tibbs. It's Tibbs again. Like we're like, oh, they won a bunch of games and made the playoffs. Yes. And now Fred VanVleet can't walk. Like, does Fred really have that many years left after playing for this man? I don't know.
Okay. Well, your thoughts on Nick Nurse are known. More of a Willie Green guy than a Nick Nurse guy.
Look, I'm not all about, you don't have to rest everybody every single day, but 40 minutes every night, like it's 3 consecutive years. You go pull up minutes per game, there's going to be 4 Raptors in the top 15. And it's every year. The only other guy that does that's Tibbs. And look what happened to Derrick Rose's knees. They're gone.
Look, that's fair. That's fair. That was pretty much You're anything right. I had. Do you want to add anything?
I mean, you know, I'm very, very curious to see like what happens in Atlanta. I could see them doing a couple of different things. Like it's messy in Atlanta right now. I know it's, you know, Brian Windhorst said something about like, I don't like calling it messy. I think they can fix it and organize and all this stuff. They've had a roster that doesn't make sense for a couple of years now. I think they want to do something with John Collins. I think they've made that very clear over the last few years. He's interesting. Having,
by the way, I didn't have any fake John Collins trades in there, but I would expect the Pelicans to keep checking in on that at the very least.
So, like, you know, he's interesting from the value proposition standpoint because he's been on the market for like 3 years, and I could see his market being really weird because, like, he's a very, very unique player. He's a roaming power forward who can't generate his own shot but can shoot. So it's like they haven't been able to push him to the five. They haven't really wanted to. But he's also like very athletic, can block shots, can make threes. He's interesting. At the very least, he's a very athletic dude that can get you some rebounds, some shot blocking, some three. I feel like there is a world where you can get more out of him somewhere. I don't know which team that is, but he's interesting. I'm also curious, like, is anything else in that roster up to be moved around? I don't think it's time to talk about, the Trae Young conversation yet. It just doesn't seem fun to play there for a lot of people. So I could believe a lot of things.
I think it would not be fun to be teammates with Trae Young. That's my read on that situation.
Just watch the games. They don't like him. It doesn't look like they like him. We haven't heard. You brought up one. We did a fake trade before around the long lost brother, Bogdan Bogdanovic. But I haven't really heard his name tossed around. I think it's just that, like, there's probably not enough perimeter shooting on the wing there, and so maybe he hasn't really been out there as a name. But I mean, you could see him moving again. I'm curious about some stuff like that. I'm curious, like, Alex Caruso is interesting. You know, if they wanted to do, I could see like a, you know, if they just wanted to like shuffle deck chairs a little bit, go lower value just to kind of get something that fits a little better and get one of the contracts out the door that doesn't make sense. You know, there's some stuff like that makes some sense. Really interesting. But there's some other stuff out there, but no telling. Those aren't the ones we've really heard stuff about. I'll be very, very interested to see if OG Anunoby actually moves.
All right, Steve the Pirate. Well, thanks for hopping on with me before this Dallas game. We will record another episode this weekend. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yar, Christian.